So, ladies and gentlemen, there is a lot of treasures in the world, but one of the treasure, the Polish Israeli treasure, is Mr. Dan Bachat. So, absolutely, Danny Bachat is a treasure. So, as I said yesterday, whatever he's going to say is absolutely brilliant, and to listen to him, we are all the time gifted. He is going to say today about the Jesus, whose real name is Yeshua, and I think that it's a good beginning in terms of the future, because to understand Christianity, you have to understand Judaism. And it was an accident that the Yeshua, Jesus, wasn't born in Zakopane, Nowy Targ, or Toruń. No, he was born in Palestine, and he's from Nazareth. So, whatever. I'm thrilled and I'm grateful that Mr. Professor Dan Bachat is once again with us, and this is a clear sign for us, for people, you know, who hopefully will attend the next festivals in the upcoming 30 or 330 years, that we'll meet with Professor again. And one of the person who constantly disagree with me, and this is a lady who is sitting in the first row, Irena, asked me, Dani, to thank you from the bottom of her heart, and because she threw out, like many of us, TV sets many years ago. And for instance, she didn't know about Mr. Obama and his policy in terms of Israel. So she would love to thank you for letting her and the people know who is partly responsible for the Polish death camps and all this. Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Dan Bachat.
Okay, thank you. Dzień dobry. Mój wykład będzie po angielsku, ale mimo temu można pytanie pytać po polsku. Dobrze? Tak. Nie ma żadnych problem po polsku mnie pytać.
So, this is just an introduction that the lecture will be in English, but you can ask in Polish.
With a very important remark on what we heard from Mr. Makuch, with Mr. Janusz Makuch. He said that Jesus was born in Palestine. Terrible mistake. And I'll tell you why. The name Palestine was invented by Emperor Hadrian exactly 100 years after Jesus' death. If you ask me where Jesus was born, he was born in the Galilee, and the family moved to Judah. And actually Jesus was born in Bethlehem, which is Judah. No one ever thought that one day there would be a Palestine. I've explained yesterday that today, when we want to speak about the cultural entity of our country, I say of our country, not of our state, our country, it will include what is today Israel, the Palestinian territories, and the western part of Transjordan. Remember that in the book of St. John, in the Gospel of John, the baptism of Jesus was on the eastern side of the Jordan. Why the eastern side of the Jordan? Because this was a part of the Jewish country. When John the Baptist was beheaded in Makairos, or Makaronte, why was it there? Because it was a part of the Jewish country, and it is in Transjordan. So actually, I would like to state that the name Palestine is a late anti-Jewish name. Anti-Jewish name, because he did it in order to obliterate the name of Judah and Galilee. Today, or since those days, the days of the Second Temple period, to this very day, when you want to call our country, how do you call it in Hebrew? Eretz Israel, the land of Israel. That's the only name in Hebrew. You never say, we, as an, even I'm an archaeologist and I want to speak about the country, the culture of the country, you know, in, let's say, the Bronze Age. To call it Palestine will be stupid because the name came thousands of years later. I'll try to bypass it by saying our country, their country, the Holy Land. Always I'm trying to find other names, not to call it Palestine, because for us, the Jewish people, Palestine is degradation. It is a wrong word which we are using. Last time. Good. No, it was a good, you gave me a good chance to start. Now this was a starter. Now we start. What you see here in the picture, is the map of the country, and it is quite good to show where the mountains and the coastal plain is. You can see the Lake of Galilee in the north, the Dead Sea in the south. I even kept on this map, I wonder if you can see, the green line. This is the border between Israel and what was the western bank of the Jordan River under the Jordanians since our war of independence. It is only to show you the absurd in those boundaries. And why did they bring it? Because Jesus, when he goes to Jerusalem, and if you think, when you read the Gospels, you'll find out, and the Acts, of course, which is a kind of an annex, you'll find out that a lot of the activities of Jesus, many of the sayings of Jesus, come from, first of all, from the Galilee, but mostly from Jerusalem. And the important thing is that Jesus, who comes from the Galilee, from Nazareth, which is here, when he comes to Jerusalem, he doesn't go like this. He goes down to the Jordan River, goes all along the Jordan River to Jericho, which is here. And here is a famous event when Zacchaeus, and I don't know how much you remember from the Gospels, he meets Zacchaeus, who was an evil man. He was a customs man in Jericho. And he goes to stay with him overnight. And what does, everybody is angry. How come you, Jesus, you go to this evil man? He says, to go to a good person is, everybody can do it. But to go to an evil man and to try to change his ways, that's another thing. Jericho is considered to be the threshold of Jerusalem, which means this is the door to Jerusalem. And we've got many sayings which are very important, like, when a libation was offered in the temple in Jerusalem, the goats in Jericho sneezed. You see? Or other saying is, when libation was offered in Jerusalem, when the doors of the temple were opened in the morning, the noise of the hinges was heard in Jericho. This is always to show the proximity, and that's why the New Testament is mentioning Jericho, from which to go to Jerusalem up, it is a distance of only 25 kilometers, which means it is a day walk, but it is 1,200 meters difference. Jericho is about 200, 250 meters below sea level, and Jerusalem, Mount of Olives, is about 800 meters above sea level. So you understand that it was not an easy thing, but it always marks, actually, being in Jericho, your feet are standing at the threshold of Jerusalem. This was the feeling when you came to the country. So you see, it is only once we have got the famous occurrence, Jesus went once like this, and here in Nablus of today's Sikkim, he found the Samaritan lady. He met the Samaritan lady. And you know the story, how he actually healed her. The other thing is very important. On the way between Jericho and Jerusalem is the famous inn, yes, of the Good Samaritan. You remember that Jesus is telling us, he gave a parable saying, What is a good man? A good man is a Samaritan who helped the wounded person, the robbed person. So altogether, we are immersed with the ways to Jerusalem. And now we go to Jerusalem. This is the city of Jerusalem. This is an aerial photograph taken from the north. And I would like immediately to concentrate on the Temple Mount, which you can see here. Today it is famous because of the two mosques, the Dome of the Rock and the Aqsa Mosque. But these are the city walls of the city as it was built by Emperor Hadrian, exactly 100 years, in 135, built by Hadrian, a pagan city, in order, as I say, to obliterate the name or the memory of Jerusalem as a Jewish city. The problem of what was on the Temple Mount in his days is cast in doubt, but I believe, and I write a lot about it, that on the Temple Mount there was nothing, because even when Christianity became the religion of the world, in order to comply with Jesus, that one day of the temple not will be left one stone over the other, it was also always left deserted. The other thing which I'd like to say, today we know from the church father that the pagan temple, which was built in Jerusalem, was built on the site where later the Church of the Holy Sepulchre was built, the Church Świąte Grób for Polsko, the holy group. And down below we have got enough remains to tell you that there was a pagan temple before, but this I leave for next year. At any rate, the interesting thing is to say as follows. In the days of Jesus, there were two city walls. One of them, which was found all along its way, is going from here. It goes here. It includes Mount Zion. Yesterday I spoke about Mount Zion, which is here, goes down to the city of David, which I mentioned also yesterday, and it ends here. This is the first wall. It goes like this inside the city. The second wall, which is also extremely important from Christian point of view, was somewhere in the northern part of the old city of today, but it was never found because no one is going to destroy houses in order to do archaeological excavations. The important thing, though, is a following one. For over 100 years of research, people tried to find where the second wall is because they knew that the tomb of Jesus, which is in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre here, must be outside of the city. And therefore, if we find the second wall, we'll know how authentic is the tomb of Jesus. Today, when we are convinced, and I speak about the scholars who deal with Jerusalem, we are convinced that the tomb of Jesus in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is the authentic tomb. So today the story is different. Today the Church of the Holy Sepulchre will dictate which is the right line of the second wall, exactly the opposite of what it was before. So this is actually this. After Jesus was on the cross, actually some years afterwards, about 9 years afterwards, another Jewish king, the last great Jewish king, Herod Agrippa I, he built another wall to Jerusalem, which goes all the way to the north. But this is out of our business now because it was after Jesus was crucified. This is a map to clarify what I've just shown. You see, this is the Temple Mount, the temple in the middle, and of course I'll speak about it the whole time, City of David, Mount Zion, and this is all the first wall. Here I gave a tentative of possibility of the second wall. The Church of the Holy Sepulchre is here, you see, outside of the city. And much later, another city wall was built, the third wall. But again, the third wall is not what we should deal now. When Josephus Flavius, who describes the city, and many scholars studied all those walls, but later archaeology proved right many things. It starts with what is called David's Tower. This is the remains of a tower built by Herod the Great, later slightly modified, but still the location is clear. And from here, the first wall goes along. You see, this is the citadel of Jerusalem, inside which you can see very well the line of the first wall. It is still there to this very day. When you walk here, and this is a national garden today, you see under the Turkish wall, you can see very well the wall of that time. It goes all around, as I have shown before on the map, and you see these are the remains which you can see of the first wall under the Turkish wall. It is a typical way of masonry from the time of the Maccabees, which lasted till the destruction of the temple in 70 AD. Then it engulfs Mount Zion. I spoke yesterday a lot about Mount Zion, but you can see the mountain is very, very well defined by nature. By the way, here is a cemetery, and right here is the tomb of Schindler, of Oskar Schindler. He is buried in Jerusalem. He asked to be buried in Jerusalem, and he is buried in the Catholic cemetery on Mount Zion. And today it became a place of pilgrimage. You know, I feel shivering speaking about it here in Krakow. And that's where Oskar Schindler is buried. The church is the Church of the Dormition of the Lady. And the interesting thing, the road which we all use today was made when Pavel VI, visited the country in 64, so this road was made for him so that he can go to the room of the Last Supper, which is here. You see, so that's, we call it still the Pope's Road. That's the name, how it is named today. All is on Mount Zion. Because of the Dormition of the Lady, here on Mount Zion, all the area is surrounded by cemeteries, Christian cemeteries, like this one which is Catholic, here is a Protestant cemetery, here is an Armenian cemetery, and here is a Greek cemetery. You see, it is a very, very interesting mountain. I didn't speak about it yesterday because when I spoke about Zion, but that's what it is. Then you have got some remains, like a gate, a very important gate in this wall. Excavations show even more. You see on top, you can see the remains of the wall. You see, very interesting, all that. I'm running quickly about that to show you. The remains are found inside the Jewish quarter of the wall. You see a tower and a piece of a wall. So altogether, we know quite a lot about it. But now we are approaching to the northern half of the city. I don't know if somebody has been here yesterday. When I spoke, I told you that the southern part of the old city is named by all Jewish and Christian pilgrims alike. It's called Zion, whereas the northern part of the city, northern half of the city, is called by the Christian and Jewish pilgrims, it is called Jerusalem, because they also did not know, as I've explained yesterday, what is Zion, what is Jerusalem, and they always had a problem. But immediately, when you look at the northern part of the city, you can see here the two domes. This is the dome over the tomb of Jesus, and this is the point where the transept and the main nave of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre meet, and even the belfry of the church is there. For me, it is very, very important because I believe deeply about the authenticity of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. In Jerusalem, there is one of the most important attractions, which is an educational attraction. In the Israel Museum, there is a model of 1 to 50 Jerusalem in the time of Jesus. And one of the things which are so important to us, they show here the second city wall, which I've just mentioned, and this is the hill of Golgotha, to show you what is the relation between the second wall, living outside the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, and the hill of Golgotha, which symbolizes the church there. This is the map of the northern part of the city. This is a 19th century map where in red you can see the line as was believed to be in the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century, the line of the second wall, but this is out. You can ask me, when you want to speak about you want to speak about Jesus in the temple. Why do you speak about the walls and why do you show everything? Because the problem is that I don't want to isolate the Temple Mount from the rest of the city. When Jesus came to Jerusalem, he did not go only to the Temple Mount. He went to the city. He lived in the city, and I can imagine that he has his daily visits into the temple as everybody does. Inside the city, there is almost no mention of any site.
Wewnątrz miasta nie ma mowy na temat jakiegokolwiek miejsca, które znamy z Nowego Testamentu. Nie ma nam nic. Kolejna ważna rzecz, ale nieistotna dla mnie, a mianowicie Ewangelię i tak naprawdę nie są to książki geograficzne. Każdy, kto... Jedyny ewangelista to Jan. On tylko wspomina o geografii, ale trzej pozostali już nic. Dlatego jeśli chodzi o opis geograficzny, chcieliśmy...
You can see immediately from the shape of the cross that we are in a Russian church, but what I want to show is the wall, which is actually the facade of the pagan temple, which later became the facade of the Constantinian, of Emperor Constantine the Great, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Many walls are there which try to explain. You see, archaeology is helping to try to understand how the topography of Jerusalem was. And today we go, this is the only remain down below, and look how deep down, which might have been belonging to the second wall. You see, I told you that we don't know anything about the second wall. But in Damascus Gate, a little piece of architecture from the time of Herod the Great, was visible, and that's all what we have. We are trying to understand the course of what the second wall was, but again, it is only, this is the piece which I've just shown you, is this one here. You see, this is Damascus Gate, and this is all what is left. So you can see that we can say nothing about it. The entrance to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, and here we can start. One of the most important events in Jerusalem of Jesus is when he healed the blind in the pool of Siloam. And here you can see the steps which are leading down into the pool of Siloam. It was excavated some years ago. We never knew where it was, because in the 5th century, a Byzantine empress, she thought that she knows where the place is. She ordered to dig in the rock, and she found something which she believed was the place of Jesus' miracle. And the point is a very interesting point. Of all the sites outside of the Temple Mount, which are mentioned clearly in the New Testament, are the Pool of Siloam, where he healed the blind, and the Pool of Bethesda, where he healed the paralytic. Otherwise, all the deeds of Jesus in Jerusalem are in the temple area. I start the story with showing you a picture of the temple in Jerusalem. You can see the western wall of the temple. Look how enormous it is. It is really enormous. Even if you see down below the stones which were thrown from the wall by the Romans when they destroyed the western wall of the Temple Mount. Why the western wall? Because it was the most prominent of all the other walls. Another important feature which you can see here, look at this. This is a beginning of an arch, which was a gate leading to the temple. The arch collapsed, with the Romans destroyed, and you can see here the picture how it happens. All the stones are falling down to the street. When I bring this street, I want to emphasize one thing. This piece of street, which you could see here, you see it here, this street is leading. It is the longest street in Jerusalem. It is being excavated for the last 10, 15 years, and we've got it all the way from the Pool of Siloam going all the way to the Pool of Bethesda. And this is very important because I say, when you walk on this street, you definitely walk on the footsteps of Jesus, because he must have walked in this place. This is the main street. All the pilgrims, everything used to go on that street. And now I start with the story. Actually, till now it was all introduction. But I mean, and this is really the important thing. What is the story here? In order to understand what happens on the Temple Mount, we have to go back to the history of the temple at that time. In order to make an introduction to explain the history of the Temple Mount, I want to say one thing. At the Temple Mount, as we know it today, and as it was known, you know, the same Temple Mount exists till today, exactly as it was in the first century AD, in the time of Jesus. Exactly the same thing, the same dimensions and everything. It has got nothing to do with the temple as it was in the time of Solomon, although the Holy of Holies of the temple, as we know it from the time of the first century AD, is located exactly on the same site where the Holy of Holies of the Temple of Solomon was, and where today the Dome of the Rock, this Muslim mosque with the golden dome, is sitting on the same place. The holiness in Jewish eyes of the holy place did not move one centimeter from the holiness as it is. And yesterday, those who have been yesterday, you remember I showed you the rock, I showed you the cave underneath and everything. What we see here is a reconstruction, which we know from one of the Dead Sea Scrolls. There is one scroll in the Dead Sea, which you all must have heard about, where it shows the temple as it was in the eyes of the sect which lived on the Dead Sea and which wrote those documents, amongst which one of them is the temple scroll. But the importance of this one is not only that it is mentioned by the people who wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls, but this is also very similar to the temple as is described by Prophet Ezekiel. And it is important because it shows that long tradition, starting from the 5th century BC when Ezekiel lived, or 6th century, all the way to the destruction of the temple under the Romans in 70 AD, all the time there was a kind of a picture of an ideal temple. And this is what you can see in this picture. This is against a reconstruction of the temple. I'll tell you the truth. This drawing which you see here was done by a French scholar in 1864. His name was, he was a Marquis Melchior de Vergueux. There are many corrections which I should do in this one. But the important thing is that the general impression how people saw the temple is very vivid in this, and I see this as an idyllic reconstruction of the temple as it was in the time of Jesus, although I know that there are some mistakes which must be corrected. You see the impression, one against the other, the one which I showed from the Dead Sea Scrolls and the one which I see by him. This is the Temple Mount. And the interesting thing is that the temple itself, the Holy of Holies, was here. When you go out, that this is, when you conclude that this is the site of the Holy of Holies, then there is no doubt about it. So actually I will say that the temple was more or less in this area. All this was the courts around the temple, and it was necessary because of the multitude of people who used to come in the three annual pilgrimages. I want to remind you one thing. All the three times when we hear about Jesus in Jerusalem, it is in connection with the three annual pilgrimages. He, as a good Jew, came from the Galilee, as many Jews did. And I'll tell you, Josephus Flavius tells us that the last time in Passover, before the beginning of the Roman siege in Jerusalem, there were million people in Jerusalem. I don't believe Josephus Flavius. Million people is too much. But even if he exaggerates four times and it will be only 250,000, it is also quite a lot. Especially if you think that the maximum population of Jerusalem, which you believe was in the time of Jesus, was about 80,000. So 80,000 versus 250,000. So you can understand. The result of which was that people had to host the pilgrims in their homes. And there was a law in Jerusalem. You have to take, when you live in Jerusalem, in the pilgrimages, you have to invite people to stay with you, and you are not supposed to take money for this. You see, so far. Other sayings like, when people were standing in Jerusalem, they couldn't move, it was so congested. But when they bowed for prayer, suddenly there was enough place. All those sayings show you how populated Jerusalem was at that time. It is the reason why we believe Herod built the Temple Mount in such a large scale, as you see in this picture. And I would like to remind you a very important thing. The Temple Mount, the whole holy enclosure which you see here, is the largest religious monument in the whole of the Greco-Roman world. You understand? The greatest religious area enclosure in all the Greco-Roman world. There is not one which is as big as this one. The western wall of the Temple Mount is half a kilometer. Can you imagine? In this half kilometer, only 57 centimeters is the so-called the Western Wall Praying Plaza. Yes, this is all what it is. So you can understand how difficult it is. I would like to say that even here we can see, for example, how people came to the temple. What you see here, for example, is a large stairwell which goes into two gates. There are two gates. Here is one, here is another one. So you'll see it later in details, to which you used to go into the temple, and I'm quite sure that this is the way by which Jesus entered Jerusalem or entered the temple when he came to the city. This is a map of the Temple Mount as it was drawn by a great scholar in the 19th century, and because of the political problems, not only of ours, because of the political problems of the Ottoman Turks, and later by the British, and later by the Jordanians, and today by Israel, we have got problems with the Temple Mount where you are not supposed to touch it. There was only in the 19th century because of the Muslims, they are so radical in Islam, they say you are not allowed to touch the Temple Mount. They do, but they don't let the others. It was always like this. At any rate, the interesting thing is that there was few moments when there was agreement with Queen Victoria and the Ottoman Sultan Abdul Hamid II, that it allowed a Christian scholar from England named Charles Warren to come and make all the measurements inside the Temple Mount, and this is what we have here. By the way, I told you about the two gates which lead to the temple. You can see here, another gate is here, another one was here, another one was here, another one is here. These are the gates to the temple. Of great importance, on which I would like to speak one day here, is the so-called the Golden Gate, which is here. And I hope that I'll have a chance to tell you about this one as well, because this is, again, connection to Jewish-Christian traditions. And I'll do it, I hope I'll have the opportunity. This is the Temple Mount. Now I'm going, this map is extremely, extremely important to the continuation. As you see, this is the Temple Mount, as it was during the Second Temple period. When Jesus came to Jerusalem, this is the Temple Mount he saw. And look what we can see here. First of all, in the middle, we have got the shrine of the temple, where inside is the Holy of Holies. Outside is the altar, the slaughter place. The court of the women is here. This is all. It has got four chambers. And here, this very narrow line is the court of the Israelites. As you go out from here, you come to the western, to the eastern wall of the temple. Here you can see another thing, which is basic. In this map, I've marked, you can see here, a line. This line is extremely, extremely important. And I'll tell you why. It doesn't exist today, unfortunately, but it is very important. Why? In Judaism, if I ask you, how can we learn about the temple? There are two sources which can tell us. One of them is Josephus Flavius, and the other one is the Talmud. Because in the Talmud, there is a tractate, there is a big chapter, a tractate, which speaks about the temple. And it begins saying the words, the temple mount was 500 cubits on 500 cubits. A cubit is about half a meter. In other words, the temple mount, in the eyes of the Talmud, was 250 on 250 meters. It is amazing, because I told you that the Western Wall, you see, the Western Wall is half a kilometer, and the Talmud speaks 250 on 250 meters. What is the explanation? You cannot imagine how many people try to solve the problem why they speak only 250 meters on 250 meters. So I'll tell you, the secret is very simple. The 250 meters was a temple which was before Herod the Great. And as I have explained, for Herod it was extremely important to enlarge the Temple Mount as much as he could for the hundreds and thousands of people who used to come. So he found the only solution will be to extend the Temple Mount from a small Temple Mount, which is here, to a larger one, which is going all around. And it is extremely important to understand the difference. Who built the smaller Temple Mount? This is really a question. First of all, you can see a picture which shows you the eastern wall of the temple. I'll go back again to the picture so that you can see. This, what I've just shown you, is somewhere here on the eastern wall of the Temple Mount. And you can see two things. There is a pre-Herodian. There is something before Herod the Great. And you see, this is Herodian masonry, which is coming against it. In other words, this is one of the points where we can see that the entire walls of the Temple Mount, the entire walls, are not made, as we say in Hebrew, with one skin. And also the interesting thing that we all agree, and I'll go back again to the same picture, we all agree one thing. The eastern wall of the Temple Mount, unlike the southern, western, and northern, the eastern wall is made, first of all, of the ancient Temple Mount, which is this one, extremely important to explain an episode in the life of Christ. And then Herod added this and added this, and so he created the eastern wall. So we must understand that somewhere in the eastern wall, you have got to have the meeting of the ancient masonry and the Herodian addition. And I'll tell you a very interesting thing. Already Josephus Flavius thought that the older Temple Mount, which will include also this wall, the eastern wall, was built by King Solomon. Was built by King Solomon. And therefore, the colonnade, which was along here, because the Temple Mount was surrounded, as you see everywhere, by columns, you see by colonnade, where people could sleep. In days when there was a big pilgrimage, there was no place to sleep. They used to sleep under the columns of the temple. I want to tell you that I see the same phenomenon to this very day. When you go to Istanbul and you go to the mosques, you can see afternoon when everybody wants to sleep, like some people here, what do? They sleep under the porticos of the mosque. Very typical, the same thing. It is considered also to be a kind of a blessing. The interesting thing is that since it was believed to be from the times of Solomon, the eastern portico of the temple, this part from here to here, was named Solomon's portico. And if you remember, Jesus, when he comes to Jerusalem, and it was not understood till recently, when Jesus comes to Jerusalem, it was the Hanukkah holiday, you know, Hanukkah holiday, that's what the Gospels say. He went out of the temple and he walked. It was cold because Hanukkah is in winter, it is December. It was cold and he was walking under Solomon's portico. Under Solomon's portico. We didn't know where it was. Now we understand very well. And he walked there and people came to him, attacked him by questions. You see, attacked him by questions. So he solved already one problem. A geographical term which is mentioned in the New Testament, which still archaeology started to study the Temple Mount in a serious way, we know that what does it refer. He went out from the temple and he walked under Solomon's portico. Interesting thing is the other thing. What gate did he come out from? You see, this is actually, you remember I said this is the women's court? This is the main gate. This is the main gate to the temple. We, in the Hebrew, or in the Talmud, it is named the gate in the east. But in Christianity, it has got a different name. If you open the second chapter in the book of Acts, you remember that Peter and John came out through the beautiful gate, and there they found the mendicant, this poor man who was handicapped, and they healed him. You remember this scene? It is a very famous scene. They healed. Also, Peter and John healed the mendicant who was sick, the one who is begging, the beggar. And the interesting thing is that Christianity, during the centuries, used to say that the Golden Gate, which is further to the north, the Golden Gate is here, further to the north, this is the gate with which it happened. But now we archaeologists, by studying the Temple Mount, we brought it back to the place where it belonged. And this I leave, as I said, when I'll speak about the Golden Gate, which is very, very exciting. Now, this is again the second first wall, and this is the Golden Gate. So important, but its location is indicating a very important thing. It doesn't belong with the archaeological or the historical story connected to Jesus. Its location is on the place where if you draw a line straight from this gate, straight line, you'll go along the axis of the Constantinian Church of the Holy Sepulchre. You understand? It is done because the pilgrims of the Christian era in the Byzantine area, they saw this as an entrance to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. It was always blocked. Originally, it was built by Emperor Heraclius, who brought the true cross to Jerusalem after it was in captivity in Persia. These are the steps which lead to the temple. This is another place which is extremely important for me, and I explain to you why. Since we, today, what I did was a very simple thing. I actually broke the tradition that Jesus entered the temple through the Golden Gate. This is a Christian tradition. That's why Heraclius, the emperor in the 7th century, built it in order to bring the true cross. He wanted to build it in the same gate through which he believed Jesus entered to Jerusalem. Not true. There was one gate in the eastern wall of the Temple Mount, but this gate was meant only for two things. And I don't know if it will be easy to translate into Polish, but what I want to say is in the Talmud it says the eastern gate was made for two things, the scapegoat and the red cow. What is this? In the temple, at the eve of Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, which is the holiest day in Judaism, they brought to the temple two rams, you know, the male, the male goat. And one was sacrificed on the spot, and the other one was taken in a great procession to the desert, from which he was thrown down the rock and killed. And this was as if to atonements, to forgive the people, that all the sins of the people will be on this goat, and by killing him, you are redeemed, and he carries all our sins. It is a very nasty habit, And indeed, the interesting thing is that already the rabbis in the Talmud are discussing if somebody remembers that this habit was practiced. No one. One said that he remembered that his father told him, that he remembered that another rabbi told him that he saw it. You see, it came just like this. In other words, it was a very rare, very non-Jewish habit. This goat was taken out, this ram was taken out through the gate. Another animal which was taken out in Judaism, in order to be pure, very pure, you had to immerse yourself in a bath which had ashes of a red cow, a cow which had the color red, and it was taken to the top of Mount of Olives, where it was sacrificed, and then burned to ashes, and those ashes were purifying everybody. Again, very, very rare. No one heard about this practice to be done. It is very nasty practice, and actually, it so happened that it served only as letting people out. Jesus could not come to the Temple Mount from an eastern gate. So we've got to look for a solution. In the excavations which were carried out along the southern wall of the Temple Mount, you can see those enormous steps. Here you cannot see, you see only this part. But later, during the Muslim period, this structure was built, but the steps continue all the way to here. Enormous stairwell. And I want to remind you of another episode in the life of Jesus. I don't know if you remember that when Jesus was 12 years old, when the family, the Holy Family, left Jerusalem to go back to the Galilee, they started to walk, and they were on the way already to Jericho, and suddenly they look, where is little Jesus? He's not there. The Holy Family had to come back to Jerusalem, and what did they say? See, Jesus was standing and preaching to the rabbis, teaching them the law. This is the first time that the general Jewish population realized the greatness of Jesus. It was a kind of a turning point in his career. And where was it? I don't know. They say in the temple. But look what happens here. When those steps were excavated, we immediately understood what is going on. What was going on is as follows. In the Talmud, those steps are mentioned twice. One, they say, that out of the three tribunals, which means out of the three courtrooms which were in Jerusalem, one where the Sanhedrin was, one was on the steps. That's what it says. The other thing they say, that Rabban Gamliel, which was the chief rabbi in the day of Jesus, was standing on the steps and talking to the people. Very interesting. So already I start to think, where could Jesus discuss a problem with the rabbi? Where they were standing? Where were they standing? On the steps. Which steps? Very interesting. You see, this is how it looks today, after the excavations, when it was remade. And look how impressive it is. The wall on the bottom, you see, this one is Muslim. But you see, they go and they go and they go and they go. They reach down to here, down to this area here. Now, these are the steps as they are. You see, this is how they were discovered when they were excavated. And of course, we cleaned, we reconstructed a bit, as one should do. And this is what we have. And this is the answer to the question. When this was excavated, the archaeologists who excavated found this stone here. You see this one. And surprisingly, one of our professors, who was also a son of an archaeologist himself, he remembered when he was a young boy, he went with his father to Paris. And he went to the Louvre in Paris. And the curators in the Louvre showed him a piece which was found in 1860 in Jerusalem. And this is the one. This is in the Louvre in Paris. And this professor of ours, he told them, listen, it looks exactly like the piece which is in Paris. Why don't we try to see maybe the joint? And you see the joint. So this is actually a stone. unfortunately, is very broken, but it is very, very important for me because it is a royal stone in the sense that the script, the size, the beauty of the execution is showing us, actually, it is showing to us what is what it served for official purpose. And only the top line can be reconstructed as one word, Zekenim. Zekenim means in Hebrew old people. But in the time of the Second Temple period, in the time of Jesus, Zekenim meant rabbis, and he meant also sages, sages like rabbis and so on. So rabbis, judges, old people, clever people, all is engulfed in this world. What I understand, what is this? It tells us that in this guy, and it was found on the steps, which means there was a place which was kept for the rabbis to stand on. They made probably an enclosure or something where the rabbis could speak to the people. And therefore, when I take all the facts of the tribunal, of Rabban Gamliel, of the inscription, and so on, I cannot escape the conclusion that the miracle of Jesus being 12 years old, discussing the law with the rabbis, must have been in this place. And this is amazing. And I'll tell you, the interesting thing, since I came out with it some years ago, the evangelists, mostly the American evangelists, are coming to make their prayers there. And I already met some Catholic groups as well, who are slowly coming to understand. Because we archaeologists, we are terrible people. We destroy old traditions. On the other hand, if I tell you that the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is the true place, and me as an archaeologist who is trying as a scholar to be honest, you have to accept it. You see, on the other hand, I can tell you about many places which are legendary, and actually once I mentioned yesterday the tomb of King David, for example, which I said is nonsense. It is a tomb of a crusader. So you see how vicious we are. We are bad people when we destroy holy places. But I want people to really know there are two, visiting to Jerusalem are two completely different levels. One of them is the emotional level. When I see people on Friday at 3 o'clock carrying the cross along the Via Dolorosa, I can say, well, it's a beautiful habit, it is a great emotional event, but the truth is that the Via Dolorosa was in a completely different way. This I say as a scholar. You see, we must understand there are two levels of a visit to Jerusalem, the scholar visit and the emotional visit. And there are two distinctive things. Sometimes when they meet, it is fantastic, but they don't meet so often. Now, Jesus is coming to the temple after he walked on the steps and is going inside. These are the remains of one of the gates to the temple. Look at the beauty, Herodian work. And you go, it is like a tunnel under the Temple Mount leading you up. Why did they bring a 19th century drawing and not a picture? Because in 1927, there was an earthquake, very harsh earthquake. And above this gate is built the Aqsa Mosque. So the British government, in order to enforce it, surrounded everything with a lot of beton, a lot of concrete. And therefore, it is not as beauty and impression and impressive as it is in this picture. So Jesus is going into this one. He's going out. And look what I want to show you. You see the Dome of the Rock. Can you see the Golden Rock? In the time of Jesus, when the temple was there, the temple was 36 as this one, but 50 meters at least. Imagine Jesus coming out, and the temple is going higher and higher, the higher he goes, till he sees the temple. And remember, who was Jesus? He was a boy from Nazareth. Nazareth was a little village. You know that it is not even mentioned in Jewish sources, so tiny it was. Because very close to Nazareth, about 4 kilometers, was the capital of the Galilee, Zephoris, as it is named. which is a traditional place where Anne and Joachim got married and were born, although the tradition says they were married in the temple. But at any rate, it is interesting. From a little village, not more than 10, 15 people, and I don't know if you know that only about 5 years ago were found for the first time remains of houses from the time of Jesus in Jerusalem, in Nazareth. Very interesting, because they were found very close to the Church of the Annunciation. So it can give more authenticity also to the site of the Annunciation. So all together you can see the greatness of the temple, a boy from the Galilee coming and seeing this greatness of the temple. And for him to say words like, I can build a temple in 3 days and destroy it in 3 days, must be a very daring story. What I brought here is a little, you can see some stones, which predate the big stairwell, some smaller stones, which are stairway going in. In other words, what I'm trying to show you, remember I explained to you that there is an older Temple Mount, which is only 250 meters on 250 meters. I'm trying to find as much as I can for this. Look at the greatness of the temple on one hand side and the poor steps you have seen on the other. This is Herod the Great. Look at the greatness. Now, this drawing is a very scientific drawing because it shows you the proportions. Look at the people standing down, the many which is standing on the top, and it will show you the great dimensions of the Temple Mount. I know that I finished my time, but I've got still a lot to say. At any rate, you can see the greatness of the works of Herod the Great. Look at it. Can you imagine Jesus from the Galilee, from a little village, seeing this mighty structure which you see here going to the Temple Mount? It is really an amazing thing. Look at that. Amazing. This is a stone which is very important. I photographed it in the Archaeological Museum in Istanbul. It is a stone which forbids the non-Jews to go to the Temple Mount. And here is one of the very important things. I don't know if you remember it. In the book of Acts, it tells us a very interesting story that Paul is coming to the Temple Mount and he's coming with two Greeks, non-Jews. And everybody is angry at him and tell him, take them and go to the place which belongs to them. What does mean belongs to them? Belong to the non-Jews, to the Gentiles. And only in the New Testament, we hear from the only time when we hear that a part of Jerusalem or part of the Temple Mount was a court to which the Gentiles could go, the court of the Gentiles. What we understand that the Temple Mount of the 250 meters on 250 meters was only Jews were allowed to go. Why? Because they knew the laws of purity. Jesus could go there. That's why he could go all the way to the temple, because he definitely kept the laws of purity. But if somebody non-Jew is coming, he wants to go, of course, to see the temple. But the temple is surrounded by the wall of 250 on 250 meters. So along that wall, when Herod the Great added this enormous new area, a tourist, a non-Jewish tourist, came to Jerusalem. He walked on the area which was addition of Herod, but he could not go to the part which was the 250 on 250. Therefore, along the wall of the 250, Josephus Flavius tells us that there were inscriptions written in Greek and Latin respectively, one Greek, one Latin, Greek, Latin, to forbid the Gentiles from trespassing under the penalty of death. Fortunately enough, we have got two inscriptions in Greek. This one, which is in the Archaeological Museum of Istanbul, and another one, a fragment, which is in the Israel Museum in Jerusalem. And the thing is that what we are trying to see, so now I told you something which is very important. We understand what the court of the Gentiles is. So look what we know. We know where the Greeks who came with Paul could be. Because of because of pictures from the 19th century, we can see a very interesting thing. If you look at this picture, which shows how neglected the Temple Mount was in the Ottoman period, but down below is a very long stairwell which goes all the way and to the other side all the way. And this is important because when Josephus Flavius tells us that the stones with the inscription which forbids people from trespassing was built, it was built over some steps. And when you see long steps going all along on the Temple Mount above, we can imagine that above it were the inscription forbidding. So we've got the southern line of this 250 meters on 250 meters. And slowly, by small discoveries like this one, we are able to create the thing. What I want to show you here, it is going back to picture you have seen differently, but you can see this is the 250 on 250, you see? And all this here, all this is all Herodian addition. So I can say as follow. The temple, as is described in the Old Testament, in the New Testament, in Josephus Flavius, in the Talmud and everything, is the one which has got this line here. And this, I will make an equation. The court of the Gentiles, which is mentioned in Acts, is actually the part which is here. Jesus could come with his apostles. He could come, most of them could come into the inner part. The ones who were not Jewish amongst his could not go, and they had to stay behind. This is as it was. And another thing, which is actually the greatest episode in the whole story, is the following one. What you can see here is a copy, not really a copy, but made in big size, of a shekel of the city of Tyre in Lebanon. Shekel. In Hebrew, you know that our money in Israel today is called shekel. It comes from the word mishkal, weight. Yes, because it weighs something. And why is it named like that? Because in antiquity, people did not have coins. What they had is silver, pieces of silver. And you will weigh them and that's how it is. So in Hebrew, shekel. And the Jewish law was that every Jewish person on earth had to give every year a tax to the temple, which will be half a shekel. Some scholars tried to understand that half a shekel will be the price of 3 working days a year. You see a small sum. 3 days a year. I wonder if there is somebody who will not be happy to pay income tax to the government for the price of 3 working days. I'm quite sure that no one will object it. I say it only to tell you that since the Jewish people was a very great number, the Jews were, you know, we believe today that the number of the Jews and number of the Egyptians, for example, was more or less the same. Today there are almost 100 million Egyptians and there are about 13 million Jews. You see, so it shows you only what is happening through history. But it was a great people, and people from the diaspora, people from the country, had to pay half a silver shekel a year, everyone. Just to show you that all the economical activities of the temple, this was a national treasury. To make roads, to make aqueducts, to make bridges, all was done by treasures of the temple. And I'll tell you a very interesting story. You know, every Christian heard about Pontius Pilatus. Everybody knows about Pontius Pilatus. What you don't know, that the Jews hated him. He was considered to be a bad person for one deed. He penetrated to the treasury of the temple, and because he wanted to improve the water supply to Jerusalem, he had a positive intention. But for a Roman to penetrate to the Jewish treasury was considered a terrible sin. A mission went to the emperor in Rome, asked him to depose him. And that's what was his end in Jerusalem. I speak about the treasures because it is so important. And I'll tell you another thing. In the last few years of the existence of the temple, whoever worked for the temple, even if he worked 2 hours a day, 2 hours, he received a salary as if he worked the whole day. Why? The idea was that the treasures will be less and less so that the Romans won't be tempted to take, the Romans will not be tempted to rob the treasures of the temple. The result of all that is, only to show you how important this half silver shekel was important, soon you'll understand how I connected it, was that I don't know if you know that in Rome was found an inscription in the Colosseum which says that Vespasian and Titus built the temple, the Colosseum, with the money which they took from the war they did. The only war they did was the war on Jerusalem, the war in Judah. In other words, in spite of the fact that the treasurers tried to throw as much as possible money to make less and less money, it was still enough to build the Colosseum in Rome. And what I tell my Italian friends, since we paid for it, and since slaves of us built it, I'm taking the Colosseum to Jerusalem. At any rate, the interesting thing, why do I speak so much about the shekel? If I come to the temple, I come with my 4 sons, we are 6 people, I go and I had to go and to give the priest 3 shekels, 6 times 1/2 shekel, for the temple. This was my duty as a Jewish person. But look what happens. In the Roman Empire started inflation. And how was inflation in antiquity? To the silver coins, they started to put copper. You see, this is how inflation was. I come to the temple with my family. I give him 3 shekels. The priest tells me, your shekels are no good. You're no good because the value of your shekel is less than the 6 shekels you have to pay the temple as every year. What shall I do? He says, go to the money changers. Now you understand why I mention it. Go to the money changers and give them as much as they ask you to get pure silver shekels. So I go there and the money changers tells me, yes, if you pay me your 4, I'll give you my 3. And what is the interesting thing? At that time, the only city, because then city used to make money, the only city which made money, pure silver, was the city of Tyre in Lebanon, you know, of the Phoenicians, because they were a very rich country. So there was thing. What you see here in the picture, you can see actually... you can see a coin from Tyre. This is a copy of it. You see the city of Tyre. You can see here is written Tyre. You see Tiro. You see Tiro. Tiro, which in Greek genitive of Tyre. Tyre, Tyros in Latin. And you see it has an eagle. Eagle is not a pure animal. So they overlooked at the fact that it is not pure, and still they used it. And so it was for a year. The importance of the silver coins was so great that when Tyre started to make coins with copper inside, because they also suffered inflation, in Jerusalem was made a mint, to make Tyrian coins, pure Tyrian coins of pure silver, for the service of the temple. When Jesus Christ is coming to Jerusalem and wants to throw away the money changers, why did he do it? It's not because he had something against the money changers, but Jesus was like the great prophets, like Isaiah, Jeremiah, who look to the people and say, look, you are terrible people. You are making sins, and you think that if you'll come to the temple and bring a sacrifice, God will forgive you. No, this institution of the temple is no good. And since a temple can be moved by the money which comes from the money changers, better to destroy the money changers, no money, no temple, and then I can destroy it in 3 days, rebuild it in 3 days, or it will be destroyed forever. This is actually the idea of Jesus. He wanted people to do the right things and not to do the bad things, and then to go and atone themselves by the sacrifices. Therefore, for me, the money changers are the highlight of Jesus' activities of the temple, and we have solved it also. Now, if I go back to the other picture, I'll show you a very interesting thing. The only place where the money changers could be, where the main entrance to the temple was, and between the holiness. You see, they cannot go. There were no money changers in the holiness. What is the holiness? The 250 on 250, which means this is the place where the money changers could be. Here there is no much place. Here no one went because there were no gates. So no, that's the only place. And I can show today when you come to Jerusalem and you walk with me on the Temple Mount, I can tell you that is where it was. In other words, the story of where it was, which was just, you know, something in the imagination, suddenly, because of the archaeological work, you can show where it is. The one of the last thing which I want to show is this one. This is a reconstruction of the great fortress called Antonia, which was to the north of the Temple Mount. You can see, it is written in French because it was done in the 20s of the 20th century. But we know that it was all wrong. But what I want to show you, you see, this is the temple. This is how they believed, the two Dominican fathers believed it was. Today we know, thanks to another Dominican father, that this is where the Antonia Fortress was. Why do I bring it to you? Because of a simple reason. The Christian tradition today is that in the Antonia Fortress, Pontius Pilate judged Jesus. Today we all agree that it could not be here. It was an army camp. It was nothing to do with the Roman administration. There was a local commander. And Pontius Pilate will prefer to have his palace not amongst the soldiers and everybody else, but in the palace of Herod, which was standing empty. And I ask you, if you have got, you are omnipotent, and you can do whatever you want in Jerusalem, will you go where there is a mass of soldiers and commanders, local commanders, or will you go to this fantastic Herodian palace, which was empty, there no one used it? What will you do? Of course, the answer is obvious. This is, of course, and because of that, the long tradition is, you see this gate, which was believed to be the gate to the Antonia. Of course, today we know that this is a triumphal arch made by Hadrian, and this is the one which is called Ecce Homo. This is the man you want. When Jesus was taken out from the citadel, according to the Christian tradition, people ask, he said, Pontius Pilate, today it is Passover. I'm ready to release one to go out. Whom do you want me to crucify? So people say, Jesus Christ, of course. So Pontius Pilate said, this is the man, when he takes him out. Ecce Homo in Latin. And that is what it is. No steps, nothing. Many of you have been to Rome. I wonder about it. Know that when you go next to the San Giovanni Laterano, there is the Scala Santa, the steps believed to be the steps from which Jesus was taken down from the Antonia. The Antonia, even as it is here, and the Antonia, the place of trial of Jesus, which was, according to me, in Herod's palace, there is no place for steps. You ask me, where do the steps of San Giovanni Laterano come? I don't really know. But you see that Jerusalem is full of legend. And what we are trying to do really is to know as much as possible and to prove archaeologically that what happened and what did not happen. As a good example, you can see this one. This one is a stone which was discovered in Caesarea. And the interesting thing is, what is written here, I will not go too far, but this is Ius Pilatus. This is the only archaeological proof to Pontius Pilatus' existence. So you see that even this. If you ask me altogether, well, I leave, this is already Gethsemane, the Garden of Gethsemane, I leave it. But traditions are very interesting. You remember that Jesus was taken by the Roman from the Gethsemane. According to the Israeli botanist who checked the trees of Gethsemane, they are 2,000 years old. So the tree which you see here might have been seen also by Jesus. And this is only to show you that we today, with a scholarly study, we are trying to revive the New Testament and the stories of Jesus in Jerusalem to make him our companion when we walk in the city, in this beautiful city of Jerusalem. Thank you very much. Thank you. If there are any questions, I'm here. I know I'm a bit late, but I couldn't stop.
If it's possible, can you say something, tell us something about the difference in size of the steps of the southern part going up to the wall of the temple?
Well, the entire length of the southern wall of the Temple Mount is about 290 meters. The steps will take from this about, I will say, 230 meters. They are very, very broad, and I'll tell you more than that. It is made in such a way, you know, I don't know, probably you in your youth and me in my youth, when we came down steps, we always used to jump all the way down. Everybody did. The problem was that in order to make respect when you go out of the temple, they are not exactly the same breadth. There are two steps which are narrower and one which is broader. Two steps which are narrower and one is broader. Why? Because when you go down this, you have to look down. Otherwise, you'll fall. And therefore, you don't run. You go down with respect. Moreover, the number of the tourists or the pilgrims who came to Jerusalem was so great that they were afraid that people will collide one which is other, so many people. So the passe lois we have got today. How do you drive today? You drive on the right and you go back on the left, right? That's the way we all do, besides the British who are strange people. But altogether, so what happens is all the gates were double. You go in from the right and you go out from the left. You see, even that, it all those kind of things show you how many people were in Jerusalem and how did they cope, how did they manage with all this enormous amount of tourists or pilgrims who came to the city. Yes.
Just in regards to those steps there, at the top there is, I couldn't see any gates.
Couldn't
at the
see?
Top of the steps there, in that photo. There didn't seem to be any gates up there.
And how? The problem is, remember, Jerusalem, after the destruction of the temple, suffered many, many destruction and reconstruction. Unfortunately, the Muslims in the 13th century blocked all the gates. But if you stand next to them, you can see the beautiful shape of the gates. They are there. Not only, I showed you the tunnel. You remember the two columns? When you go and you climb up, and you see the temple platform on top. Yes, they're beautiful. All of them are really, really beautiful. Unfortunately, some years ago, the Muslims, out of radicalism, turned all the volume of the passages into mosques, and they don't let non-Muslim visit. It's pity because it is very impressive.
The Gospels were written several decades after Jesus died.
Yes.
And in the meantime, they had been communicated verbally, embellished, details added. The Catholic Church edited them, and even abolish several Gospels. So how can we rely on the version as we know them today?
Mm-hmm. I will tell you what. First of all, as we always say, also when we refer to the Old Testament, don't look for things which are beyond. Stick only to the things which are there. No doubt, as you probably know, we have got many more Gospels. Today, the Gospel of Peter is becoming a part of, I will say, of the canonized things. You know, when we try to understand the development of the New Testament, we know that there was one source which we don't know so much about. Then comes Luke. Luke is considered to be Lucas, is considered to be the oldest. Then it was copied by two other Gospels, Matthäus and Peter. Then it was copied again by Marcus. And then it was copied again by John. You see, but no one had any intention to bring it geographical terms. The only one who was a bit geographical was John, but he was the latest of all, after all kind of cooking and mixing. I hope that by all the Gospels which were found in Egypt, I don't know if you know the discovery of the so-called Nag Hammadi, I don't know if anybody knows about it, there is a lot. I'll tell you the truth, you must understand that the world is still deliberating so much, deliberating about the New Testament. I'll give you just one idea. The Americans, American scholars, and how they decided, let us check the New Testament from the beginning. And they did something very interesting. They gathered 70 sages from all the universities of the United States. They told them each one should read the New Testament. And whenever there is something which is said, that Jesus said, if you understand for sure Jesus said it, mark it in red. If you doubt that it was written by Jesus, said by Jesus, read it in pink. If you are possibly not said by Jesus, do it in gray. And if it is for sure not written by Jesus, make it in black. Then they collected all of them. It is called the Jesus Seminar. And they found out that many of the sayings of Jesus is not sure, I'll say it, not sure that they are really of Jesus. On the other hand, many, many more than what expected was said by Jesus, according to the 70 people. Of course, seven sages. Of course, it is not this way of making sayings of Jesus by statistics is not acceptable. People usually don't accept all this seminar. But it is only good to show you that the deliberation about many things in the New Testament, like the criticism of the Old Testament, exists, and it's good. It gives us a field of science. You can't imagine every day when I get, you know, publications of all kinds of editions in Europe, mostly in England, how many books are being written every day. Publishing today with computers, it is easy to write. How many books on the New Testament are being published every day? It is an amount, I don't know who can read all of them. The amount is unbelievable. You can find 100 times a month the Gospel of Matthew, for example. Endless numbers. This is how it is. Science goes on. And I'm quite sure, I put not literary criticism. What I did, I tried to show that there is a good archaeological background or geographical background or topographical background to the stories of the New Testament. I'm very happy with the four Gospels we have today. I think it is enough for me to work for another 100 years. I wish I would live that long. You see.
Będę mówił po polsku. Panie profesorze, proszę.
I'll speak Polish. Can you please refer to an inscription in the Holy Sepulchre Church near Calvary. To the right, you go into the St. Helen's cistern, and on the left-hand side, there is a sacristy. And apparently, in the 1970s, there was a Lord, we came and we praised. Is it authentic?
I try to explain what it is about. The story is very interesting. As I told you, the head emperor Hadrian built a pagan temple. Who speaks so much about it? Hieronymus. Hieronymus is a very important. He writes some letters to his adherents, and that's how we know. When Hadrian came to build the first temple, the area of the church was a quarry, a stone quarry. Yes? You know what's a stone quarry. He had to build enormous walls to fill in order to create a platform on which he built his temple. And actually, in one of the slides, I showed you the facade of these walls, which were to hold, fill, in order to build. Okay? Now comes Constantine. He reduces, takes down the level of the fill. Why? Because in Hadrian's time, all the remains of the tomb of Jesus, the tomb of Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea, everything was completely covered. The only thing which came out above the fill was the top of Mount Calvary, of the Calvaria. And therefore, Hadrian on this built a statue of Aphrodite, of Venus. And therefore, the father of the church, who was witness to the construction of the church, was Eusebius, the bishop of Caesarea. And he, therefore, misled because of the statue. He thought that the temple was a temple to Aphrodite. He did not understand. It was his thinking was corrected by Saint Jerome, by Hieronymus. Now, what happens then? He had to reduce the level in order to expose the tomb of Jesus, the tomb of Nicodemus of Arimathea, and others. Because the Christians, the early Christian community, they thought that Hadrian lifted the fill so much in order to hide the tomb of Jesus and so on. Remember that he persecuted the Christians. The point is, the exciting thing is, this is really very exciting, that in excavations, some of those retaining walls which were built by Hadrian were exposed in the excavations. You understand? Excavations found them. On one of them is a beautiful depiction of a boat. And underneath is written in Latin, not a good Latin, but in Latin, Domine Ivimus. O Dominus, who is Dominus? Jesus, of course. Domine, O Jesus, we have come. Which means we came to visit you. We are pilgrims who came to visit you. And now the question is, when was it written? Was it written when Hadrian built those walls and a Christian pilgrim came and he had an opportunity in a clandestine way to write it? Or when Constantine the Great reduced the level and it was exposed? This is a discussion between scholars. Fortunately enough, mostly the Italians, they have got very good maritime archaeologists who deal with boats, navigation, and so on. When they saw the picture of the boat, they say the boat must be 2nd century. 2nd century is Hadrian, and it is very, very important. It is an authentic inscription. And the very important thing is that if I spoke about it, that I'm a defender of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre as the authentic place, if you add to all what I've said about it, and you add to the fact that the oldest Christian inscription found in Jerusalem was found in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, you've got an answer. Is it a holy place to Christians or not? And of course, I don't want to go further, because on the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, I can keep you here till the evening. But the point is that I'll try to do it next time, and then I'll go refer to it and tell you more than about it. But the important thing is, you're right, it is an important, it is authentic, and this is actually answering your question. Okay, so thank you very much.